I'm speaking today with Joe Trevino, who's candidate for City Council at Large Number 5. And Joe, I'm going to start off with a question I ask everybody, which is, why are you running for this office?
Well, let me tell you what. I am now retired, number one. And over the years, my investments have gone well. 3 years ago, I started a company, and now, you know, I'm in my third year. So now I have some time to volunteer, and this is, in essence, what I'm doing. This is a volunteer job. The city of Houston has been great to me. I have lived the American dream. You can see where we're living, and now I think it's an opportunity for me to give back to the city that has been so great to me. Plus the fact that I think that, you know, I have some unique experiences that I think I can bring to the table and make the city even greater. I would love to work with this mayor. This guy's done a wonderful job, and I would love to be part of the train he's driving north. I want to be on that train because every day this city gets better and better. And this is why I'm doing it, because I think I have enough flexibility in my time. I don't need a job. I'm not looking for a job. And I want to be part of making sure that Houston is even a greater place to live.
Okay. Now, what do you think distinguishes you from the other candidates in this race, these eight declared candidates and at-large number 5?
I saw all the candidates, and, you know, the city of Houston would be blessed to have any of them. But clearly, I think I'm the better choice because I bring a unique type of experiences. Number one, you know, I spent 32 years in public schools. 25 of those were as a public school administrator, whether it be a principal at the middle school, especially the high school, and then as a superintendent. And as a leader in the school system or in public school, my skills are tested daily. I don't think a day went by when my common sense, my ability to solve problems, my ability to be out there handling things was not tested. Certainly, you know, people look to you for your leadership. I mean, their children are in your hands. And then teachers, their careers many times depends on the relationships that you build with them. Then there was the parents. Then there was, of course, everybody else, my supervisors, the board members, and finally, the ability to spend money wisely. I don't know if you're familiar with HIS, either way, the budgets are done, but the budgets are decentralized. And they give you a pot of money. For example, when I was at Austin High School, they would give me $12 million a year, depending on my enrollment, depending on my attendance, depending on a lot of factors. And it was my job as a leader to make sure that the predetermined objectives were accomplished, which meant, you know, a number of things, tax, graduation rates, etc. There's like 25 indicators. The other one was with dealing with the community. You know, there was things that happened outside the building that, you know, that ended up being safety issues, and that I was called for, even if it happened in the front door of their homes. So I have, over the years, have dealt with so many issues regarding our families, regarding a big bureaucracy like Houston, that I think I bring some very unique and new boots to all this. So this is what my take on it. But if you look at the other candidates, they're great too. There's some wonderful people that are coming in. But clearly, I think I'm the better one.
Okay. All right. Let's talk about some issues here. What is, you know, we're coming to the end of another hurricane season here.
Yeah.
What's your assessment of the city's current hurricane preparedness planning?
I think that after Rita, that the city did a great job of getting into a learning curve, a learning mode. I think that the city opened their arms to the folks from Louisiana, and then you know, even our own little hurricane that hit the Texas coast. And I think that the city has really come together and connected the dots, the county, the state, the cities, the sheriff's police, the police departments. And I think now that, although I don't think it'll ever be perfect, you know, it's like a fire drill at a high school. You can practice it twice a month, and the day of the fire, something obviously will happen that, you know, that's unexpected. But I think the plan that is in place now, you know, although hopefully we'll never use it again, is one that is in progress. And you know, I think every day there's some very talented people out there from the county, the city, that are refining and touching it up. I think the biggest hassle that was last year was not opening the second lane, the incoming lane, fast enough. You know, had they done that, you know, within a few hours of the evacuation, I don't think we would have had any problems at all. But, you know, again, there was, you know, communication issues from the city to the county to the state. And you know, my favorite part is, you know, saying who's going to go first. You know, that'll be hard to do because, you know, if I live in Houston and there's a hurricane and they tell me you're to stay home and, you know, I got all the people here, there's a good chance that I'll leave. You know, of course, I will follow the rules, but there's a lot of people that will not, you know, listen to the suggestions of our leaders. But as it is now, I think that it's a great plan. I think that they're on the right track, and all we can do is wait for it to happen again to see if it's going to work.
Okay.
But another thing is that they've had a couple of runs, practice runs. I think they did one a few months ago, and it went well. But, you know, coming from a big high school with over 3,000 kids, and, you know, even a simple fire drill, you know, everyone was different. Sometimes we'd get out of the building, and the fire department wanted 2 minutes. Sometimes we could do it in two. Sometimes it took five. You know, it just depends. So.
Okay. The city currently has $45 million budgeted for drainage improvements in fiscal year 2008. Do you think this is enough, and what do you think the city is doing for flood abatement?
You know, my take on flooding is just my immediate neighborhood, the Heights. You know, we live in a very high-cost area, and I don't think that any time it rains over 5 inches, our, you know, drainage doesn't work. And, you know, is $45 million enough? I don't know if $45 million is enough. But I do know that we need to do whatever we have to do to fix it. You know, it took me forever to get this front of my house just dug up and unclogged all the way down. And my God, we have we pay a sizable amount of taxes, and this is not acceptable. You know, it just takes so long. But you know, they tell you, well, it rains a lot, and it's got to run slow, but is $45 million enough? I don't know, because I really don't know what needs to be done. I can only talk from my experiences in my neighborhood.
Okay.
Now, they use all $45 million in my neighborhood, I'd be happy.
All right. Well, what do you think the city should be doing that it currently isn't?
Well, you know, I think they're doing everything they possibly can. I think that maintenance is probably an issue because these folks come out here and clean these things only when you call them. You know, if there's a regular routine or a regular calendar, but when you would see the tractors come up and keep them clean, you know, that may help. I don't know. Certainly, there's a lot more people moving in the neighborhood, and there's a lot more water in our drainage. And I mean, there's a lot of factors involved, but certainly, yes, you know, that is going to be a big issue for me.
Okay. City Council recently granted historic district designation to the Old Sixth Ward, which gives them some unique powers to regulate development in that neighborhood. What's your opinion of this, and what's your opinion of Mayor White's statement afterwards saying that he did not intend what was done for the Old Sixth Ward to be a blueprint for other neighborhoods?
I am a big, you know, again, I'm talking as a Heights citizen. I love preserving some buildings. Now, I understand that we must have a balance of old and new. I clearly understand that. But there are just some neighborhoods, you know, be it the Heights, be it the Sixth Ward, that, you know, that merit some looking at. And then there's some neighborhoods in the city of Houston that really need to be completely redeveloped because there's really the houses are so far gone, and there's really no real interest in preserving those neighborhoods. But you know, I think that if there's a community and there's a force behind it, and there's an opportunity to preserve the old, at least to make it, you know, to make it look nice, let's keep some of our history, because I've always felt that for us to go forward, we have to understand our past. And that, you know, we can do that. You know, like San Antonio has done a great job with their little area there, King Williams. That's a great little place. Can you imagine had they not decided to do something with the Alamo and just, okay, let's tear it down. And I mean, those are historic areas. To them it is, But every area in our city and in our state, there are some places that need to be preserved. But again, there's got to be a balance of new development. And you know, this new development, this big 18-floor buildings are good because it gets cars off the street. But then there's somebody that's got to be staring at it every day. So, you know, you solve one problem and you create another one. So.
Okay. Michael Bromwich, the former U.S. Justice Department Inspector General who investigated the problems with the HPD crime lab, recently testified before a State House committee that a special master should be appointed to determine what role faulty evidence analysis played in hundreds of convictions. Mayor White, Chief Hurt, and DA Chuck Rosenthal think a special master is not necessary. What's your opinion?
I really agree with the mayor. I don't think, you know, a master is necessary in this case. I think that we have enough firepower within the city of Houston. We have enough brain power to be able to solve our own problems. I think we ought to give the leadership, the current leadership, an opportunity to do what they have to do, you know, to sort of like a growth plan. I say, you know, let's see how much you can accomplish in a year. And if the city, the citizens still don't see any progress, then perhaps it's time for a master. Very similar to what the state of Texas does for schools that are failing. They are not immediately put on a plan of a master. You know, they're going to give the school district and the other people that run the school an opportunity to do something, to create an environment where some progress is made. If it doesn't happen, then the master comes in. Because, you know, that's a master is kind of like a death sentence. I mean, that's it. And I think that we need to give the opportunity to the current leadership for two reasons. Number one, it'll give them an opportunity to solve a problem, and they personally will become better at whatever it is that they're doing, as opposed to having somebody come and dictate, well, you have to do this, you have to do this. And it's a lot better for morale when you can do it yourself. And you have a sense of completing a project by yourself. And it's a big one, I understand. But, you know, immediately they've started, they're building that new building for all the evidence is going to be stored. So, I mean, that's a big store. And I'm sure that now they'll come up with some type of inventory control where everything can be tagged with a bar meter or something. So I think we ought to let Chief Hurt and Mayor and the administrators handle that, give them an opportunity. If not, then it's time to talk.
Okay. Council is currently working on an ordinance that would require developers to either set aside a certain amount of park space when they build single-family residential, multifamily residential, or mixed-use developments, or to pay a fee that would be used by the city to acquire land for park space. What's your opinion of this proposal?
One of my passions, of course, is park space, bike trails, you know, clean air, and, you know, the old green movement. And I think it's a great opportunity for the city to create some more park space. You know, you look at Dallas, you look at San Antonio, they got three times the number of parks that we do here in Houston. I mean, and then there's another study done that said, no, Houston has a lot, and because they start counting people's backyards and anytime there's no structure. But I mean, I agree that the developers ought to provide either, you know, and they need to have a choice, you know, we're going to build this or we're going to pay a fee to do the parks. But I agree with that. I totally agree, especially in an area like our Heights, where you know you see three McMansions next door. The only area left is 3 feet between the homes, and there's almost 4,000 square feet in each one of those homes. And in the back, they built these humongous garage apartments that are the size of most normal person's homes. So yeah, those developers need to come up with something where we can at least begin a movement of bike trails, of parks, of that sort of thing.
Okay. Metro will make a final decision on the route for the university's line this fall. Where would you like to see that line go, and what's your opinion of the process they followed to determine where it will go?
You know, I am totally for Metro. Totally. You know, and if you've ever visited some great cities in Mexico, Guadalajara, for example, is a city that is 500 years old. And they have an elaborate system to transport people. You go to Washington, D.C. You can even go to Dallas. But coming to Houston, you know, I think the people at Metro ought to be given the opportunity. I mean, they have hired experts to study where these lines ought to go. And, you know, over and over, there's a group of people and there's some politicians that do not want that rail line going through there. But, you know, I think, Charles, we have to look 20 years from today. What is this place when we are not here? I mean, what is this place going to look like? So we have to, you know, get out there and do some, you know, some think forward thinking as far as when Houston has say 5 million more people. How are we going to move them around? And you know, the city of Houston has always been a can-do city. You know, can you imagine, Charles, when back in the early 20s, when they decided that they were going to dig up Galveston Bay to create a ship channel? Can you imagine kind of looks these people must have gotten? I said, you're going to dig up Galveston Bay so the boats can come into Houston? Can you imagine what the people would have said? The other good example is, can you imagine in the 60s when they decided to build a stadium and put a roof over it? Can you imagine the looks those people must have gotten? Or can you imagine when the Allen Brothers landed in Houston right there where Spaghetti Warehouse is and said, we're going to build a city here? So over the years, Charles, we've had some really wild things. And, you know, Houston is a city of can-do people. And I think we allow Metro and, you know, what they're doing. I like what they're doing. I love that rail. I mean, this whole thing about trains. I guess my favorite is because when I have season tickets to the Texans, I just drive downtown, have dinner or lunch at one of those nice restaurants, pay $2, get on my little train, takes me all the way to the stadium. And then come right back, and I'm 5 minutes from there. The same thing can happen to those folks on Richmond. The same folks will happen to the folks going all the way to Airline or all the way into the East End. So I think that we ought to let Metro and their, you know, studied folks and the people that are studying this to let it's got to go somewhere. And, you know, we're going to have to make some sacrifices. Just like they sacrificed all the land for the Astrodome. Can you imagine then how those folks must have felt about that?
Okay. The city of Houston is supposed to redraw district council lines when the population exceeds 2.1 million. There's some census data to suggest that we already have passed that milestone. Mayor White has said that this task will not be undertaken until after the 2010 census. What's your opinion of this, and what process would you like to see followed in order to redistrict the city council?
You know, this, and I'm sure this has happened in a lot of other cities, you know, and a lot of things have happened as far as, you know, the city will come up with a plan and somebody will file a lawsuit and they'll take them to court. But I think what the city needs to do is go and see what other cities have done and how they have approached this. You know, there's been growth in Phoenix. And I think, you know, that's happened in Los Angeles. Some of the bigger cities have done this. And adding more representatives may or may not be the answer. I don't know. But certainly we need to find a sensible way to do this. And, you know, again, we go to the old study committee, study input from the state people, state from other folks. The universities have a lot of great, and then just study it and then just do what you have to do. I don't know how many more we would add because of the population. You know, I don't know how much the growth would be. If it's one more, then all nine would shrink and they would add another one or add another at large. Or that is something that a lot of people would have to make a big decision in.
Council recently voted to abandon a one-block stretch of Bolsover in the Rice Village to a developer who will turn it into a pedestrian plaza as part of a mixed-use project it's working on. The Chronicle editorialized that calling such an abandonment poor public policy. What do you think about that?
Well, I think possibly, you know, in the next one, you know, this one's already probably done. But at the next one, there needs to be a lot more input from community, from businesses, and from other people that have some kind of stake in this. I think that we need to kind of develop our ground rules before we make any real moves. But again, you know, it goes back to the developer. What are we going to get from the developer? Is he going to develop some parks from here? What is it what are the benefits to the city or to the, you know, to Houstonians from doing that? But I think there's a learning curve from it. You know, this one happening, the next one, I think we need to approach it a little differently and perhaps you know, come up with results that are different. Because, you know, I always believe that if you do the same thing over and over and expect different results, that is the definition of insanity, I believe.
Right. Okay. Earthlink has recently agreed to pay a $5 million penalty to the city for failing to meet deadlines in its contracted construction of a citywide Wi-Fi network. Do you think the original deal was a good one? And what do you think the city should do if Earthlink ultimately, you know, walks away from the contract?
Well, you know, if there's a contract, you know, and the Earthlink signed and the city signed, then, you know, they're obligated to the terms of the contract. But I think that, again, you know, our mayor is out there, and, you know, on the front line doing this sort of thing. It's unfortunate that we, you know, we ended up with a company that, you know, didn't do what they were said they were going to do. But I think that we need to proceed this and see how, you know, because there's a written contract, and now it's coming out the payment. They're paying the city for not doing what they were supposed to be doing. So, but I agree with what the mayor and the current administration is doing of you know, proceeding with the legal courts and see what happens.
Okay. I mean, do you think that the city should still pursue trying to build a wireless network?
Oh, yes, absolutely. You know, and if this current company comes to a halt, then, you know, we need to, you know, go after another one. I think it's, you know, again, if we're going to be a great city, you know, like the San Franciscos and the Bostons, which we'll never be a Manhattan, but we can be a high-tech Houston. And but I think the city is in a right of doing this, and if it doesn't work with this company, I think we need to pursue another one.
Okay. As you know, the city of Houston recently installed a bunch of cameras at intersections for catch people running.
I know, I got caught in one.
You did?
Yeah.
All right. Well, what's your opinion?
Oh, I thought it was great. It was wonderful. I thought, you know, because people really don't stop. You know, the old California stop, we just kind of roll. Well, now they're, you know, that's kind of usually on the turns. You know, people really don't stop. But I think it's a great opportunity. But the good thing is that the people that get caught have an opportunity to appeal this. And, you know, there's a chance for you to meet with somebody and appeal it.
Well, what did you do with your ticket?
No, I just paid it.
You knew they got you?
They got me. And there's the brightest light that goes on every time it comes on. And you know, and I've always been a firm believer of cameras, going back to my high school experiences, is that, you know, we had them all over the hallways, and it was a large campus of 3,400 kids. And, you know, kids were doing something, and I'd call them in, and the kids would deny it, and this whole thing. So we'd bring Mama in, and said, "Man, I just need you to see this." And then Mom would just look at the child and say, "You lied to me. It's all on tape." But again, it's a wonderful thing, as long as there's a chance to appeal this.
Okay.
And, you know, of course, a lot of people say it isn't fair, but, you know, I'm curious to see how much of traffic fatalities those lights will bring, you know, in a year. You know, I mean, you know, because I'm kind of a data-driven person. I have to have numbers. And I do well with, you know, data and that sort of thing. So I'm curious to see, you know, take 10 lights and how many accidents you had in 1 year, and let's go back. Of course, you know, it's tough to tell because, you know, the number of drivers increases, but, you know, that's all you can do is look at the number of fatalities at 1 year versus, you know, in 12 months. And if we increase it, then, you know, maybe this is not working. But if we decrease the fatalities, and again, you know, we're the revenue is, you know, it is a little revenue raiser in it.
Okay. All right, Joe Trevino, thank you very much for talking to me, and good luck to you in November.
Thank you for coming to my lovely house in the Heights.
Thank you very much.